Call the Senate Tax Committee to order for January 27, 2015. Members, we have a few members short. Senator Rest has an issue in her community, a tragic shooting in her community she's working on, and so she's not going to be here this morning. We also had another bill scheduled for hearing today dealing with assessor training and accreditation. We added two bills of mine, being that we thought we were going to have a hearing on assessor training and accreditation. The senator that has that bill is continuing to work on the language, so we're not hearing that bill today, which left us with a little light agenda. But I thought we had these two bills of mine, so we'd hear them anyway today. And so I'll turn the gavel over and...
Senator Scoyer, would you like to take them as they're on the agenda? Senate File 9 first?
Yes. Right. Mr. Chair, we'll start with Senate File 9. And right. Mr. Chair, if you would announce, I believe we have a quorum.
Members, we do have a quorum this morning.
Thank you. Members, Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 9 is the continuation of an effort that started a number of years ago. There was a property tax working group that spent the better part of a summer and fall working on the property tax system in Minnesota. It's very complicated, and they were looking at ways to streamline it and to make it more understandable. One of their recommendations, and it was one of their top, I don't remember if it was the first one or not, was that we needed to figure out a way to simplify the ag homestead criteria. If you would look in your packet, there is a flow chart that looks like this. And this is the mechanism that a local assessor would have to follow in order to make determinations as to the whether a landowner would be able to qualify for the ag homestead. The ag homestead is an important provision for landowners in that it reduces their class rate to 0.5 if they qualify. And so there's significant tax ramifications, and assessors are struggling with this very complicated flowchart. So the department and the working group and others, myself, I was on the property tax working group, came up with some recommendations to simplify this flow chart. We had the bill in committee 2 years ago, and I'm not recalling if we actually carried it to conference committee or not, but I know we had a good discussion about it 2 years ago or so, and the decision was made that we would put the issue aside, let the stakeholders and interested parties talk to their members, to farm groups, to landowners, and see if we could find if there were additional obstacles, if there were changes that would be recommended. And so we are back now because the issue, has not been resolved, and I'm thinking that it's an issue that I need to continue to work on. The best way to get people working on an issue is to have a bill and get it introduced and put it on the table for discussion, and they'll start to come around and tell me what the complaints are. So that's where we are in the process. There are three of these flow charts in your packet. There's the original one, which is the current status of the homestead classification. There's one of these that has three red X's on it, Those are the provisions that are proposed to be eliminated from the criteria. And then the third one is the flow chart that would be left after those changes that are in Senate File 9 would be made. And I'm not going to walk through, I don't know if the department wants to walk through some of the flow chart decisions that they have to make, but I wanted all this information to be in front of the committee members and be in your minds as we go through this session, because I would like to see if we could make a little progress on simplifying the decision-making and the qualifications that have to be made to qualify for this ag homestead. Let's see. I don't know if DOR is interested in coming up and talking about the history, about some of the current determinations or not, but for myself, this is what my comments are, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman, and if you want to ask the department if they want to come up.
And Senator Scoyer, before we move on, we do have the A2 amendment, which I think is an author's amendment that makes two slight changes, so maybe we should put that on. And then,
Mr. Chair, thank you for reminding me. The A2 amendment is an amendment that I would like to offer. If the changes in Senate File 9 were enacted, there would be some savings to the state, and there would be less impact to property tax, to the ag property credit. And we do not want this to be a revenue generator. We want it to be revenue neutral, so we can have a policy discussion without there being tax implications. The tax impact to the state, I think, is around $5 million. So what the amendment does is it takes those dollars and provides an increase to the ag homestead credit in a comparable amount, so that Senate File 9 would be a revenue neutral bill.
Members, any?
And I would move the
Senator Scoyer moves amendment. The A2 amendment. Members, any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted. Is there any others who wish to testify? And we'll take testimony, and then if there are questions for Senator Scoyer or any of the testifiers, we can take that. You just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us to testify on this bill. My name is John Hagan. I'm the director of the Property Tax Division. And we're so pleased to see Senator Scoyer bring this bill forward. The flow chart is, as complicated as it looks, it's even more complicated in actual practice. It started off with the potential for farmers to live off their lands as a result of the flooding of the Red River Valley in 1997. Which made a great deal of sense at the time, that when people lived in an area that was prone to flooding, it would be a nice provision for the tax structure to recognize that these individuals should be allowed, in the case of the Red River Valley, to live off their farms and still retain their ag homestead without having to go back, rebuild their structures, and flood out every single year or every few years to retain their ag homestead provision. And when it was such a good idea in the Red River Valley that several years later there was a tornado, I believe it was in St. Peter, and at the time legislators typically look back at, or staff, I'm not certain which, look back on what had been done at the 1997 flooding and brought that same language forward to the St. Peter tornadoes. And even though it made a great deal of sense that in the case of the Red River Valley, where an area was particularly prone to flooding, that people would, in that one instance, be allowed to live off their farms and still receive the ag homestead provision. In St. Peter, it was likely an oversight, and it would have been nice if the department had weighed in more about how that maybe wasn't such a good idea at the time for the likelihood of a tornado to come back and keep revisiting the area time after time. In any event, with that language in place, it continued on, and it got picked up in more and more and more instances and more situations where farmers were granted the homestead provision without actually living on their property, to the point where it is as the ag flow chart as it looks today. And it's very complicated as it is. It's even more complicated in actual fact. As complicated as it looks, it's likely even more complicated in actual fact to try to administer this. I've heard some assessors say that they spend as much as 80% of their staff time trying to administer agricultural homestead. And on some of these peculiarities that are resultant of the legislation that's evolved over time. So a simplification in this area would give assessors back a great deal more time to do what they do best and what they likely should be doing, valuing property and classifying it correctly. Mr. Kloxing is much more knowledgeable than I am in the specifics in how many people are affected in each of the various provisions of the ag flowchart, which he could go through if you would like.
All right. Thank you.
My name is John Kloxing. I work for Department of Revenue. And I can go through this flowchart in what is a very complicated process and attempt to explain the columns a little bit. So in the first column that you see that is proposed to be changed, that would be when an individual owns the property but does not live there and is being farmed by a qualifying relative of that owner. And if you move over one other column, then it's a property that is owned by an individual but being farmed by a qualified individual that is leased by an authorized entity but farmed by an individual. If you go over to the fifth column, it's owned by a qualified entity and farmed by an authorized individual of that entity. And then the last two columns are property that's owned by a trust but farmed by a qualified individual, and then property that's owned by a trust and leased to an authorized entity and farmed by a authorized individual of that entity. So hopefully that clarifies it a little bit. In that first column that I described, we did a survey.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, maybe if I apologize, could you give us a little idea of what a qualifying individual could potentially be?
Sure. The qualifying individual, if you look in the first column, it's the sibling, child, grandchild, or parent of the owner or the owner's spouse actively farming the property. So it lets it extend, but to immediate family. If you look at the qualified person for a authorized entity, that person is a member of the trust, not the trust, the authorized entity, a shareholder or a member.
Okay. Thank you. Members, questions for either of our Senator Senjum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just touch on that authorized entity a little bit? Could that be an LLC or something like that?
Right. And okay. If you look at the definitions down below, it can be a family farm corporation,
okay,
a joint family farm venture, limited liability company, or a partnership operating a family farm.
Thank you.
Right. Members, other questions? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this might not exactly be a question tied to this exact issue. Well, it is, but it's a little different. What I really want to know is about the life estate. How does a life estate figure into this classification system?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we have traditionally said that a life estate, the person who grants a life estate retains enough ownership interest to qualify for homestead.
Yes. Thank you. There must be some, I agree with that, and I think was what I understand the intent to be, but there must be some gray area or some difficulty in discerning that. And maybe just let me tell you about an incident that happened in my county, which probably has happened elsewhere. I know there are six or seven instances in my county, but it had to do with the life estate. And so the mother still lived on the farm, but the farm was in the life estate to her son. And because her son obviously was taking care of the billing for the taxes went to the son's address. And then somehow that got somehow mixed up, thinking that he owned the farm, although obviously he doesn't until his mother dies. Then he would, but not now. And then there was something about linkage. And then because that was then linked to his property, there was a problem with the taxation. Now, fortunately, after a good deal of work, our county auditor was able to kind of straighten all of that out, and it actually reduced the taxes by half, so it was quite significant, as Senator Skoy has said. But my concern is that it seems to be kind of a convoluted process, and so I appreciate the desire to simplify it. But in this case, I'm worried about a gentleman who had to go to great lengths. It took a year. Then he contacted me, and it took several months from my office to get it finally straightened out. And so my hope is that somehow we can clarify this even greater, especially when it comes to life estates, because I appreciate the fact that the original owner who grants the life estate is the owner of the property. And I'm just wondering if there's a better way to clarify that so others don't go through this kind
like
of
everyone
quagmire.
Has comments on.
Yeah.
Sir, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, if I might respond to that. and it does sound like the right prevailed in the end, and it sounds like that's an excellent example of some of the complexities encountered in the property tax. But I maybe could theorize that if we could simplify some of this flow chart and get it back to the basics of people living on the farm, people retaining life estates, it would give assessors more opportunity to concentrate and focus on the basics of homestead, and we'd be less likely to encounter problems like this that where an individual like that certainly should have retained the homestead. It should have been the mother's homestead based on her life estate and the son's homestead on whatever property he held elsewhere would have continued. But it is a very complicated system, as you know. Minnesota property tax is very complicated, but I think the more we can simplify it and get back to basics, the better able assessors will be to administer the basics.
Thank you. Anyone else to Senator Nelson's question? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, members, it's a perfect example of the complexity that we have developed over the last few number of years. And part of the reason that the Property Tax Working Group brought this issue forward for simplification. But it also brings to light the importance of having a good, solid base for our assessors' professional training so that we have consistency across the counties. And it would, you know, the more professional development the assessors are able to do and have will help them as they're bringing uniform assessing to the state of Minnesota. So I think it's bringing a couple of issues to light that we will be contemplating as we go through this session.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Any other? Senator Guzelka.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Skoy, first of all, I love the idea of simplification, but is anybody losing out in this? Are there examples of people that, you know, had it that are not going to get it?
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Guzelka. Yes, there are. There will be landowners that will no longer qualify for the homestead classification, and you can go down the little bubbles or balloons and figure out who they are, primarily those that have are not living on the land and do not have a direct ownership criteria. One of the questions that I expect will come up, and there are other testifiers, so you know I don't want to be stealing their thunder, but my guess is they're going to talk about those people and whether we truly intend for them to not be able to receive this tax benefit or not. One of the questions that I'm going to ask of the testifiers in the department, and I can ask it right now, is, you know, okay, so we've got this proposal. Is there a few of these that we could perhaps leave in place to minimize this negative on landowners and still accomplish, you know, maybe 80% of the goal? Mm-hmm. You know, so we're going to start trying to, at some point, see if there's some middle ground that we can get to.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Senators, any other questions at this point? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'll just point out for the committee that there is the revenue estimate, and the revenue estimate is prepared with the A2 engrossed into it. I'll also note for the committee that there is some interaction with the estate tax, and we don't have a revenue estimate for that yet. There is part of the qualified farm and small business deduction that is at the $5 million exclusion references this homestead, agricultural homestead, and so there will be some revenue generated because some people will no longer qualify under the qualified farm and small business.
Thank you,
I will pass that to the committee when it becomes available.
Thank you. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Ms. McQuay's point, and that is going to be a complicated analysis to understand, because while an individual or a landowner might lose their qualification for the estate tax exemption under the small farm or the farm provision, if they're actively engaged in the business, they might be able to pick it up under the small business provision. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a nut to crack that we're going to have to work on a little bit.
Thank you. Senator Sundrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Skoy will probably get into this in further testimony. I don't know, but last Thursday night, for instance, our House colleagues in our area held a hearing down in Stuartville. I don't know, 150 people were probably there. Literally farmer after farmer came up and commented on the property tax impacts to their properties, and in most cases probably due to school referendums, and a good many, perhaps nearly all, were at the point of talking about, you know, whether or not they could even continue to farm. So, you know, as we get into this, it just seems to me, in some cases, these are people probably for the most part living on their farms. I'm sure some other people have bought land off-site, so to speak, and are farming that. But this agricultural issue is a great big issue, at least down in southeast Minnesota and probably statewide. So, you know, hopefully, the ice seems to be a little thin here, but riding on sound ice as we walk across this lake.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sundrum, I understand this is not the best timed bill I've ever had. I've looked at my own personal property taxes. I'm aware of the increases in value on leg land. But it isn't – if somebody lives on the on their farm, they will get the homestead. These are for people who don't live on them that would be impacted by this change. But having said that, we have a problem with property tax delay. You know, we've had this run-up in egg value or land. You get this run-up in values, and the assessors are using sales data from a year or two ago, and the economy turns the other way, whether it's in housing or commodity prices, and there's a two- or three- or four-year delay when the assessed value on your property tax statement is catching up with what is actually going on in the world. And for the housing crisis, it was a problem. For ag land, it's a problem. You know, we're open to ideas as to ways to minimize that delay. We're open to ideas on ways to try to reduce the impacts. But it's a hard issue to figure out because of, you know, you've got to have this delay, and then it's a further delay because you make the changes at the levy level, and it's another year before it impacts property taxes. So it's a issue that we need to be working on, and you know, I've asked all the folks that I am around, anybody got good ideas, we're sure open to them because we'd like to figure something out. But you're absolutely right, it's not the best time bill that I ever had, because I understand that there is commodity prices are down, egg values for taxation are still relatively high because they're counting on aged sales data, and there's an issue there to work to think about.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Skoy. I do compliment you on taking us on this journey, so to speak, and talking about this. It's important.
Thank you.
Senator Ortman and then Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I'm glad we're having this conversation. I have a question for Mr. Hagan. And before I say anything else, I want to congratulate you. I understand that this is your last week, and we are truly going to miss your expertise here in this committee.
It is. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Hagan, a question about separating the ownership and the tax liability. That part of the concern I have, and correct me if I'm wrong, is we're now going to separate the person who owes the tax as the owner that might not be living on the property, and the person living on the property gets the tax exemption or the homestead credit. I'm a little troubled by that because the owner is still liable for the tax liability without the benefit of what was intended to be a credit for that ownership. So now you're going to have folks that leave the farm. The children may be remaining on that farm, farming, get the benefit of the tax credit, but the seniors who maybe have moved elsewhere are the ones that are liable to enforcement action for non-payment. Now you've separated the two. Are you concerned about that?
Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I'm going to refer that question to Mr. Clarkson. Very honestly, this whole issue has gotten so complicated, don't feel real very capable of answering questions of that complexity. So,
Mr. Clarkson.
Senator, under that condition, that scenario that you described would still exist, where somebody could have their qualifying relative live on the farm and they could move into town and still receive homestead. So that's not a change that is being proposed under this. What this would do is if no one is out there living on the farm, that homestead would no longer exist.
Senator Ortman?
Well, just one other.
Senator Scott.
Can I add one thing? As long as it's outside of four townships that they move, because if they're inside of four townships, then they get to keep their homestead irrespective of whether anybody lives on the farm or not.
Senator Ortman. So for clarification, Senator Scoy, are you saying you live in the neighborhood, you still get the credit, but if you move to town, you don't? Or to the out of state or somewhere else, you do not get the credit?
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, I think it's about 24 miles. I think that's four townships, six miles square. You have to be within four townships. You can own land, farm it, live in town. As long as it's within four townships, you maintain your ag homestead. If you get outside the four townships, then you start looking at these other conditions, such as having a family member that's actively engaged in farming living on the farm.
Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Then Senator Scoy, I wonder how much are we really making this less complicated for the assessors?
Well, Senator Ortman, when you look at these flow charts, this is the current one with all of these decisions to be made. This is the flow chart that we would have when we're done. There's quite a few conditions removed. And so it would be simpler.
All right.
I'm not, whether it's better, that's another question, but it would be simpler.
Members, other questions for this set of testifiers? Anyone else who is wishing to testify on Senate File 9? Thank you, Mr. Hagan, Mr. Clarkson. Sir, if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom May. I'm the retired Hennepin County Assessor, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers, where I currently serve as secretary for the association. MAO supports Senate File 9. Every year, our association prepares a legislative platform for the session, and one of the items on our platform reads as follows. MAO supports consolidating agricultural land and buildings, including house, garage, and 1 acre, into a single classification rate. Changes to the qualifications for agricultural homestead have added to the complexity of administration of the agricultural homestead classification and confusion on the part of taxpayers. So this bill really addresses some of our issues we have. One of the main issues that assessors have in ag communities is this actively farming classification, and looking at the chart, you can see why it causes them problems. The other thing that Senator Scoy mentioned was the property tax working group, And one of the main tenets on that group is they did a comprehensive study of the property tax system, was to make simplicity, transparency a priority. This would move in that direction. In that study, they made 19 recommendations to improve and simplify a property tax system. And one of those 19 was to revamp the agricultural homestead classification process, and it would greatly simplify the agricultural homestead process in their determination. So with that, MAO does support this bill as a step forward to simplify the process that assessors are enforcing right now. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, and we may be going the same place. I'm just wondering, when you were listening to Senator Nelson's story earlier, did you think, my gosh, if we had a simpler process to establish the qualification, it would give the assessor more time to delve into a little bit more complicated situations like the one Senator Nelson's constituent had?
Well, I agree with that 100%. And basically, I've testified in the past that sometimes the complexity in the system takes the assessor away from the real duty that they have, and that's to value property. So every complexity that we add to the system takes time to administer and leaves them less time to value property. So that's one of the reasons assessors are for simplification.
Sir Nelson, I'm sorry if I took your...
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always good to have somebody add another voice to that concern. My question is, for those of us who find this chart hard to read, it's so small, the print is must be about a font of 6 or 5, I think, something that should probably be illegal. But anyway, very hard to read. And also for those who might not have this, can you describe for us, if this Senate file as amended is enacted, just kind of give some general descriptions of who would no longer qualify for homestead under this proposal. Just kind of describe that particular entity or person that would no longer qualify.
Mr.
Well,
May?
My belief is, of course, having my experience in Hennepin County, I really didn't have to deal with this that much. But our outstate assessors deal with this every day. And I think the people that would not qualify are the people we've already talked about, those people that do not live on the farm any longer and live outside that criteria that was described by revenue.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And Senator Nelson, when you're looking at this flowchart, and I understand it's extremely difficult to read. I have the same glass issue that you have. But what the way this works is you start up in the upper left-hand corner, and it says, does a natural person own the ag property? Well, if it's yes, then you go down to yes, they do qualify. If they say no, then they go over to another balloon. So you kind of work your way across through the no's, and the first set of no's is the ag property leased to an authorized entity from the owner who is qualified person in the authorized entity. So that would be the first area where there would be no more options for qualifying. All of these little balloons down below would no longer qualify. And then as you move across, there's column 5 or 6 or whatever it is with the X through it. You can read through those. And then the last two on the right side. Those would be the entities that would no longer qualify for the ag homestead under Senate File 9.
Yep. Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Nelson.
Oh, thank you, and thank you, Senator Scoy. And I understand how the flowchart works. I think what I want to know is under the no, that first no, well, what's an example then of an authorized entity from the owner who is a qualified person? So who is an authorized entity?
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, from my conversations with some of the farm groups, this might be the time to bring them up because I think they have examples
Thank
of people
you.
That have contacted them that say, well, you know, here's my scenario. Currently I'm getting it. If that passes, I won't.
Thank you. I think that will probably answer my question.
I think it would be helpful to bring them up. And
Senator Scoy, Senator Nelson, thank you. Others who are looking to testify on this, thank you, Mr. May.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Peterson. If you'd both introduce yourself for the record, please.
Tom Peterson with the Government Director with Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm Doug Busselman. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau.
All right. Mr. Peterson.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And again, I'm here today to voice that our organization has concerns about this bill at this time in its current form. Due to concerns from our members, many of them, like you have a letter, I think, from Andy Sierra, who's one of our members and a farmer in Brandon, Minnesota, that highlights how the loss of the special ag homestead would impact his family's farm. I was an alternate on the property tax working group, went to many of the meetings that Senator Scoy did, and very familiar with it. And our policy also, you know, looks at supporting the idea of a homestead. You live there, you get the credit. But I think as we started to look at it and get this out to our members, we started to get a lot of calls from what I was struck by, younger members that live. It's not complicated. It's complicated family structures because, you know, mom and dad might live on the farm till they're in their 70s or 80s, and a son or daughter want to come into the farm and start farming. How does that work out? And so that is, the point I want to make there. We are aware of the MFU is aware of the complexity in which assessors encounter in establishing homestead. Many of the items you see stricken in this bill were additions that Farmers Union has worked on over the years. For example, adding grandchild as eligible person, that provision MFU worked on with then Representative Westrum, as many times we see farming skip a generation. Because oftentimes, as I mentioned, complex family arrangements in farming, many of these additions have been necessary, whether it is a family farm corporation, a joint family venture. I always think of the line, they aren't making any more farmland, get what you can. And that's what we see people, you know, they maybe live near the farm homestead, but their land is farther away. It might be 10, 20 miles away that they're farming these days. In ag committees and as farm groups, we talk all the time about helping the next generation of farmers do what we can. The average age of a farmer in Minnesota is 58 years old. Only 6% are under the age of 35. Getting homestead classification helps that situation, people like Mr. Sierra's. And I'm sorry that if it takes the assessors a little longer sometimes to help out, but if it helps our farmers, I think it is important, and it does mean a lot to the ones that we've heard from. But that being said, as I said, I was on the property tax working group, and I've looked at the flow chart and shared it with our members a lot, and we'll continue to work and see if there are ways to simplify this system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Busselman, do you have anything to add?
Yes, thank you. Again, for the record, Doug Busselman with Minnesota Farm Bureau. We greatly appreciate having had the opportunity to discuss the concepts of changes proposed in Senate File 9. These conversations were with Senator Scoe as well as the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and all of those were very helpful in having a better understanding in the background that resulted in the proposal. Minnesota Farm Bureau does not support passage of this legislation. Our opposition is based on the roughly 7,900 Minnesota agricultural property owners who would be removed from the qualification from agricultural homestead classification. Our members have expressed the strongest level of concern over the current burden of agricultural property taxes. The change in vision to take away the relief provided by classification as agricultural homestead will result in even heavier tax burdens. From the Minnesota Department of Revenue, we learned that over 6,100 property owners would be impacted by the X in that first column, which is by far the biggest classification that would be affected. Additional business structures, as you move across the chart, and trust ownership configurations would have many of the same types of similar issues. These changes would hit farm families very hard who are in the transition of generational transfer. The impact would be on both the young farm families entering the business as well as the retiring older family members moving out of the day-to-day operations but likely continuing in some capacity with the ownership of the land. While we are opposed to this proposal at this time, we want to stress that our willingness to communicate with our members to the need to consider options and evaluate through our policy development process ways we can offer solutions to deal with the complication of the system as well as some of the other issues that are involved in this particular proposal. And we look forward to working with the senator and the committee and others to attempt to try to resolve those issues. Thank you.
Mr. Bosselman, thank you especially for that comment at the end, because I think that's what I heard from Mr. Peterson was maybe not supportive of this proposal, but interested in continuing to talk to Senator Skoy about potential changes. Mm-hmm. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To both farm representatives, do you have ideas now that you can bring forward to help make it simplify that your groups would approve?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at this time we don't have specifics on this particular proposal, and we would need to work at getting those. Our concerns, our members have been working on property taxes, but for the most part we've been looking at other options to try to alleviate some of the current burdens. And so our attention has been on other areas versus this type of an approach.
Thank you.
Senator Orton.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, it seems to me that farmers are reasonable taxpayers just like anybody else, and so they have been making their plans according to the current system of law. And so they want to rely on the fact that our laws are going to be consistent and stable and that they can make their decisions, investment decisions and transition decisions based on those laws. When you have a change like this that upsets the planning process, would mean a very big change for some of these families and investors. And I'm wondering if there's some way to grandfather this, to say that farms that aren't currently in transition will be treated in such a way. If there were some way to grandfather, I would encourage you all to consider some way to grandfather in these changes so that those are currently in the system or currently who have been in the system for a couple of years or qualified for these taxes would continue for a certain number of years as well. You could also time out the current provisions and give them time to plan accordingly.
Senator Skoy.
Senator Ortman, clearly we're going to be looking at options. For me to be sitting between my two farm organization friends, and I understand that I've got some work to do here. I think that it's important to try to figure some of this out. I think if we can simplify it, it would be good. I also think that I might be one of the few legislators, because I am a farmer, that would be able to work through this complex issue. So I'm going to work on it a little bit. I'll take a look at your suggestions, anybody else who has suggestions. The other thing I want to say is that the real way to solve this is to just reduce the disparity between homestead and non-homestead. And that would require what they're trying to accomplish is by trying to reduce the tax burden across the state. That would be the best. But we all know that that's an expensive proposition. You know, we're looking at school facilities. Currently, when there's a bond levy, agriculture is on that. But if we're going to take agriculture out of that mechanism for funding buildings, it would be a huge shift onto the other property taxpayers in the community. So it's very involved trying to figure out where we can go with this. You know, we're looking for ideas. We're looking at trying to find some solutions internally in our own office. I've been working on it. We don't have the answer. I don't think there is any one answer. But if we can continue to work to try to lower property tax burdens, that would be a way to accomplish our goal, because it would minimize the importance of this. But it's clearly, when you cut your taxes in half, it's a significant impact on the operation. And the other thing I would like to just kind of add, and I think we're probably getting to the end of this conversation, is you know, back prior to the 1997 flood, people lived on the farm and had some ownership, and then they got it. And it's only been the last 15 years, you know, that this proliferation of changes has occurred. And I'm just as guilty as everybody else. I mean, one of these little balloons has got my authorship on it. So I'm familiar with the legislative, you know, inclination to help folks in your communities, and so I understand that. But we'll work on it and see what we can come up with. If anybody's got any good ideas, we're sure open to it. And I really appreciate all the work the department has put into, and the working property tax working group did put into this, because, you know, putting this stuff together for us to understand it's very involved, and I appreciate their effort on that.
Thank you, Senator Scoia. Senator Scoia, is your intention to just have this bill laid over?
We're laying this on.
All right. Thank you, Senator Scoia. So Senate File 9 will be laid over for further consideration. The next item on the agenda, thank you to everyone who testified, is Senate File 257. Senator Scoia, that's yours as well.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I'm here with Senate File 257. And this is... it's just another one of those issues that we are kind of trying to work our way through. This bill would repeal provisions that agriculture supply facilities use for pollution control as they have their chemical, and the question about fertilizer containment. It gives the exclusion for facilities that are used to contain chemical and fertilizer from spills. And its current application in the state is about $6 million of property value that is being excluded, and if we repeal it, would be shifted on to other property, or would be shifted on to those businesses and off of other property taxpayers. If we don't do something, this potentially has the same this has the potential to have the same issues that we just went through with our bins and tanks conversation about, are these buildings part of the containment or not. And if it's fully implemented under that scenario, the property tax shift would be $72 million. And so we have an issue that's kind of looming. It's because there's not clear understanding among assessors as to what is to be excluded and what is not. From my perspective, these facilities are required by law to have containment of fertilizer and chemicals, and I kind of looked at the potential for a property tax shift onto homeowners and towns that host these facilities, and I think that from my perspective, the best course today would be to repeal the provision which would have these containment facilities paying property tax in their local communities. And this is a relatively new issue that came up, so we will see as we go forward what those facility owners, what their opinion is of this. But as with the other issue, we're introducing a bill and having a hearing on it because we want to hear from folks who have an interest or an issue with regard to this property tax exemption. And so I'm here with Senate File 257. I don't know if the department wants to speak to this. They might have something to add.
Looks like Mr. Hagen has some comments.
Okay. We'll see, answer questions, and go forward from there.
Thank you, Senator Scoia. Mr. Hagen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is John Hagen again. And if I could provide a little bit of history on how we got in this situation. In 1992, legislation was passed that exempted, and I'll read from the law, secondary containment tanks, catch basins, dikes used to contain agricultural chemicals in the event of a spill. In July of 1992, we issued a memorandum to all county assessors advising them that they should exempt any property that was an approved secondary containment tank, a catch basin, dikes used to contain agricultural chemicals in the event of a spill. And we wanted to say that typically these basins or dikes were made of concrete or steel and had to contain an area of 110 to 125% of the capacity of the largest tank. When I look back on our notes on how we got to where we're at now, I look back on the 1992 notes I had when I went out on a new law tour where we go out and explain how the laws that were passed and how they should be administered to assessors throughout the state to try to make certain everybody is uniformly applying the exemption laws. And in my notes, there wasn't a great deal of history, but I did find where we'd talked about or where I talked about that the secondary, not the primary containment, should be exempted. Over the next 20 years, we didn't really deal with this a lot. It wasn't a particularly big issue, and we weren't very concerned about it. We had one or two questions in the early days, and nobody thought about it again until about 2012, when a county assessor looked at the law, who hadn't really been subject to the earlier interpretations, and looked at the law, and he questioned if maybe, if you look literally at the law, if it should be not just exempting the containment, the dikes and the berms and things like that to prevent spillage, but if the entire fertilizer storage facilities, and in some cases maybe even barns or feedlots, would be exempted under this provision, which, and we looked at the law without the benefit of history and looked and thought very likely if the law was read without any history or any background, you could very easily reach a conclusion that all these big, giant, complex fertilizer or these fertilizer complexes could be exempted from property tax, which, as Senator Scoy mentioned, would have a huge tax shift. Left unchanged, I think our interpretation would be going forward that if you looked at the law and in response to that question, we would probably advise assessors to exempt all these properties, which would create a huge tax shift. And the legislative intent and legislative history is a little unclear. We had one of our attorneys about a year or so ago go back and try to find if there was any tapes or anything that spoke to conversations that were discussed, and we were unable to find any. So basically our best attempt at recreating history is my memory, I guess, is how we've always interpreted in that 1992 bulletin that we have always interpreted and administered it, that it really applied to the dikes and the berms, et cetera. And we think what may have happened is in the interim between 1992 and the present day, in that 20-year span, the way farming and agricultural business changed so much. So perhaps what wasn't even a question or a concern back in 1992, the way fertilizer has changed and the way farming has changed has become so much more prevalent that likely based when you look at the law without the historical lens, if you look at the laws that were applied to the farm fertilizer facilities and perhaps anhydrous ammonia tanks and things like that, if you looked at that now without the knowledge of history, I believe our conclusion would be that all these facilities would be exempted unless, as Senator Scoy's bill proposals, that provision is exempted or amended. And one final note I'd like to make is that assessors are terrifically good at valuing an entire property or exempting an entire property. Where we run into difficulties, as Senator Scoy mentioned, with respect to the tanks and bin situation that resulted in a study and some legislation last year, the difficulty always occurs when you try to separate or split the baby and try to identify something that's exempt and something that's taxable. So it is, again, so much easier and so much more consistently applied when you have something that's entirely exempted or entirely taxed.
Thank you, Mr. Hagan. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to reiterate what Mr. Hagan said about the changes in the agriculture business, particularly with regard to anhydrous ammonia. There has been tremendous consolidation. Every community used to have a small farm supply facility that had fertilizer and some chemical and maybe even anhydrous tank outside. Over the 20-some years since the early 90s, that just has really changed dramatically. And so what we have now is instead of a lot of spread out facilities, we do have these very, very large facilities. And I think that, and you know, we'll hear from those folks as we go through the session, but from my perspective, those people would like to, are going to be interested in maintaining their involvement in their community. They're going to be interested in maintaining their contribution to the property tax base. I don't think that they would be actually asking for a complete exemption from paying property taxes into their communities because there are costs to the communities associated with having a large farm supply facility in your community. And so we'll hear from them, but I'm hopeful that the impacts on those businesses will be, you know, relatively minor, and that they would be willing to absorb those. But we'll see.
Thank you, Senator Scoy. Mr. May, did you want to testify on this bill as well? I've got you on the agenda. Welcome back.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tom May representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. Our association does support this Senate bill, and the reason we support it has basically already been discussed. There's confusion with the assessors about what the statute really exempts, and I think with the newer interpretation, there's a lot of property out there that would, if we implemented it the way the new interpretation goes, it would exempt a majority of the property. Right now, I don't think a lot of the property under the interpretation is exempt. It's taxable at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. May. Members, questions for Senator Scoy or either of the testifiers? I don't see any. I assume Senator Scoy, you want to lay this bill over as well?
Lay it over.
All right.
And then I'd like to speak.
All right. So, members, we will, and I want to go back and just note we're laying Senate File 9 over as amended, and the Tax Committee will also lay over Senate File 257. And members, we need to address the minutes, so take a look at that. And
go ahead and do the minutes.
All right. Members, any corrections or additions to the minutes from January 13th? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Minutes are adopted. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I want to follow along with Senator Ortman's comments, thanking Mr. Hagan for his years of work. The individual that trained John into the assessor business is Reuben Rydeen. He resides in Clearbrook, my hometown. And I've had the opportunity to have conversations with Mr. Rydeen about John and his starting in the assessor business. He started as the assessor in the county of Lake of the Woods, which is in my Senate district now. And a long, long career, and I really want to thank you for your service. It's been a pleasure to work with you. I truly think we've made improvements to the property taxes for Minnesotans, and I want to thank Mr. Hagan for his public service. And I would hope you all would do the same as he goes off to retirement. So, thanks, John.
Thank you, Mr. Hagan.
And with that, unless you wanted to say a few words.
It's just thank you, Senator. It's very kind, and it's been a great honor to represent the Department of Revenue before this committee and working with you. And as Senator Scoy said, I think we made some improvements, and we continue to work towards a better tax system in Minnesota. So thank you so very, very much for your friendship and your help to that end.
Thank division you, meets tomorrow. We will announce further meetings at that time.
Okay. So thank you, Senator Scoy. You're seeing no further business. The Tax Committee is adjourned.